Hey everybody, welcome to another thrilling episode of Data Exposed. I'm your host, Scott Klein, and with me today is Maxim. Maxim, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, nice to be back.
Yep, so it's always always fun having you back because we love talking about the kind of the big data topics that you always come prepared to talk about. But before we get started, I want you to take a second. For those that don't know who Maxim is, shame on you, first of all. but take a second to introduce yourself.
Sure. I'm Maxim Lukyanov, Program Manager on Big Data team at Microsoft, working on Azure HD Insight service,
yep.
Primarily on Spark, R servers, yep. Those kind of things.
Cool. So you and I have been talking about, like, there's this whole push around Spark, right? And
oh, yeah.
Supporting Spark and HD Insight and things like that, right? And we're, I think there's, the reason you're here is, how do we think about, let's do a series on Spark and how we can get Spark, people interested in Spark and HD Insight, right? And get the performance out of that, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a very good time to talk about performance in Spark.
Like, yep.
Spark 2 was out for about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So we have enough time to kind of assess how it works.
Yeah.
We have many customers doing various interesting things with Spark 2, like bringing it to kind of porting their old workloads to Spark 2 or running new ones. And we accumulated some experience, and in many cases, Spark 2 kind of gives a very good performance boost for customers' workload.
Yeah.
And after optimizations that we do with customers,
okay.
They see like 10x improvement in performance. So it's kind of a very,
cool.
Very good stuff.
Yep. Yeah. So we talked about doing a quick series, a quick series on Spark. So let's get started. So why don't you take it from there? How do we think about Spark? Where's Spark today? How do we think about Spark 2.0? 2.x, right? And what does that give us, right?
Yeah, so today, just to be clear, like performance is a very deep topic. So, so that's why we decided to do kind of a series of topics. And we'll see how many chunks we'll need to have. But yeah, performance is a deep topic.
We're at least having one, right? May have a second one.
Yeah, at least we give it justice by having multiple topics. Yeah. So that's good. So we did at least one thing right. In general, Spark today kind of stands in a very nice position. Like when we have these experiences with customers trying out new engines that came out with Spark 2.x, we in general hear the sentiment that, hey, Spark 2 new engine is kind of awesome.
Yeah.
What do I need to do now with this new engine to like get the max out of it? How can use it in the most efficient way?
Okay, cool.
Because it's a new thing, and like we all kind of learning how to use it.
Yep, okay, cool.
Yeah, so to get started, so what can we start with? Well, let's start with kind of a basics. So Spark use cases as they apply to performance.
Okay.
So Spark has this nice property where it kind of a platform and applies to a variety of workloads in a very consistent and unified way. That's why people like it.
Yeah, okay.
So you can use it for batch, for real-time event processing, for machine learning, and you can build also custom applications. There is a plethora of ISV applications that use Spark as their compute engine.
Okay.
And use it for data warehousing, just to list them all. So, and the nice property is that you'll use the kind of this single execution engine, consistent APIs across all of these workloads.
Okay.
Very nice.
But this is where we kind of see Spark being used today, right?
Yeah, so this is today. And basically, in this talk, we'll focus on how you optimize these use cases from the point of view of performance.
Okay.
And these colors kind of illustrate, like, traditionally, we use kind of engineering kind of brain power to go and, like, hey, I know this set of techniques to optimize performance, so I'll go apply them. And this is blue traditional kind of use cases belong to this use case. So you can use engineers to optimize performance.
Yeah, because when I'm looking at this, I'm thinking, okay, we have ETL batch processing. There's, if I'm a SQL guy, I know we have some ETL being like SSIS and things like that. Or we look at Azure, there's more of kind of a, Azure Data Lake type of scenario where we didn't get into here streaming real-time event processing. Now we have Azure Stream Analytics. So how do, it's interesting to say, how does Spark come and complement or work with in these areas, right? Because they're at this point we're I don't want to say competing, but at the same time it's like how do we think about where does Spark fit in when we have these other technologies?
Oh yeah, that's a very good question. So that's where Spark kind of comes in and unifies them all. Like hey, you can do all of that with Spark.
Oh okay.
And the way it's done is like hey, Spark was born like as a batch processing engine, so you can certainly do SQL and batch processing pipelines. But it also has Spark streaming, where you can say, hey, here's my real-time stream of events, so let me like process them in a real-time fashion. And Spark says, hey, this generic compute engine that I have, like you can use it for both. You can process batch, you can process streaming. And the nice property of that kind of central compute engine is that this performance optimization techniques that you use for it apply now to both streaming and batch in many cases. Like, of course, there are some specific use cases, but in general, this set of optimization techniques that we are going to go through is applicable to all of this workloads with a different degree of applicability. Okay. So that's kind of the nice...
That makes sense, okay.
That's primary point of why Spark is so beloved by developer community is that...
It's just catch-all.
Yeah, it's a kind of a catch-all. You learn this engine once, and then you apply your knowledge to all of these workloads.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah, very efficient.
Yeah, very nice.
Right. So let's move forward to say, hey, so why does it matter? Why performance matters? So, as we already established in this talk, we like Spark 2.x. It's like this new engine that we are going to talk about in length is great. But in terms of optimizing performance of this engine, how much of a difference does it make when you optimize performance? So let's do a little query, here. So I have this cluster, actually. Let's take a look at the cluster. So it's a Edge Insight cluster, Spark cluster. 40 nodes of D14 VMs, kind of a sizable cluster.
Oh, nice. Yep.
Yeah. It has our test data set of 100 terabytes.
Wow, okay.
And we'll go like run different queries and different pieces of queries. And this data set is our test data set. We build it based on the problems that we saw in production with our customers. So we kind of reproduce some of the problems that we have seen in our test data set so we can later on go back and take a look at them.
Okay.
So one of the smaller queries that runs just on a 10 terabyte table, so it kind of finishes fast enough for us for the talk. So if you just run this query, and you'll see kind of a standard Spark shell. So we are using bare bones kind of Spark tools here. Yeah. So to kind of reduce number of translations. Ah. So in Spark shell, if you run this query, that's an optimized query. You can see that it runs fairly quickly for the 10 terabyte table, and it finishes off in some number of seconds. So let's take a look at how quickly it finished. So it should be here. Let's refresh. So we just rerun this query. So it took 19 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's
fairly fast, almost in the interactive, very interactive kind of landscape.
Yeah. Okay.
And now if you look at the query graph of that query, you can see that it was fairly sophisticated query. So it has all of these kind of joins, aggregations, different tables.
Yeah.
There is this one big fact table. That's a kind of a primary thing that this query is querying.
Mm-hmm.
And then you join multiple other tables to it. And then you do some more aggregations, some more joins, some more aggregations. So that's
pretty complex.
Pretty complex. But the thing is, it's pretty typical query as well. It kind of represents a star schema. You can see that this is a fact table, and then all of kind of dimensions that you join in into this guy. And from here, even at this high level of view, you can see some patterns in this query. You can see that this nice long blue rectangles here. So in our performance talk, we'll discuss, hey, why it's good to have this nice long blue rectangles.
Yeah.
So we'll get to understand why it's good. We'll get to understand how you go about making sure that the query plan of your query looks well. You can find the differences.
Okay.
But just to make a point, so what if we didn't do the optimization that we're going to go through? So what would be the impact? So I will spare you running the long query because it's kind of long to wait. But I have pre-recorded results of that query. So even if you just remove some parts of the optimizations from the query, you can see that the result would be like 1.5 minutes or 1.7 minutes compared to the like roughly 20 seconds.
60 seconds.
Okay. So we're already talking about 6 to 7x difference in performance of your query. And for interactive workloads, for interactive scenarios, that may be like a huge deal.
Yeah.
And in the cloud environment, at least it talks to like the nice property of the cloud environment is that you can always translate performance into a cost. Like if it takes longer for you to run your queries, that means that you need to stand up your cluster for longer time, and it will cost you more.
So
that's the impact of the performance. And just quick look at this query graph of unoptimized query graph, you can see that, oh, where is my nice blue rectangles? So now there is no nice blue rectangles, they're all broken up. And if you look at it closer, you can see that there's fact table, and then we do some exchanges, sorting, sort merge join. So that's one of the signs of why your query is performing now not as optimal as it can be. So impact of performance can be, or impact of optimization can be significant. And with new Spark engine, there are certain things that it requires you to do or understand to get the maximum, the max out of, the maximum performance out of it.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and yeah, like you said, I think we'll, you know, we'll be talking about that in future shows about.
Yeah, so the point of the series is we'll go like from basic scenarios or basic techniques to more advanced techniques kind of in a step-by-step manner.
Cool, yeah. Okay.
So just to start kind of this discussion of why, how you optimize performance in Spark, maybe we can, for today, we can sort of focus on some kind of a high-level overview of what you actually need to care about in the first place. So what is this blue rectangles that we talked about? what do they do? Yeah. So we can start with that.
Sure, yep, let's start there.
Yeah. So Spark 2.x, there are a few new things we released in Spark 2.x. One of the primary things is a conclusion of the Project Tungsten, so-called Project Tungsten. So Project Tungsten was focused on optimizing performance of the core Spark engine, started from version 1.4, I believe, and it finally kind of was complete in 2.0.
Okay.
And what it brings, it basically modifies the Catalyst Query Optimizer in Spark to give it ability to generate code. Yep. So instead of just running some regular Java functions, it actually now can generate very optimized bytecode to process your data.
Okay.
Then it switched from Java garbage collection management, kind of as a memory manager, to direct kind of its own native memory management.
Yeah,
manager.
Okay.
So it bypasses Java garbage collection and manages memory directly.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And finally, it also has completely optimized reader for Parquet files.
So
Kind of from the from a community point of view, it's focused on the Parquet. So and the Parquet file reader was optimized about 3x in performance in the Spark 2.0 release.
Yeah.
So if you look at it at this Project Tungsten from like end-to-end point of view, you can see that it's kind of optimized this whole query processing pipeline, starting from the beginning down to the lowest level where you actually read these files, this data from the underlying file.
Okay.
So all of them in the name of performance. So this whole thing was all about performance and kind of takes end-to-end approach to it.
Yeah, so they really looked at the engine and said, how can we optimize the performance in from end-to-end, like you say, end-to-end?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the results are great. Like at the high level, you can say that, hey, with Spark 2.x, you can get like on average from 3 to 6 performance gain. But this is like averages. They kind of they always kind of hide some little truths. In Spark 1.x, it could have been like even impossible to run some of the queries.
Oh, okay.
And now it's with Spark 2.x, it brings much more stability into the mix.
Cool. Okay.
Okay. So so let's go through this kind of pieces of the equation. So Catalyst Query Optimizer brings the code generation into the mix. So when you run your query, it kind of generates codes at nice. But the primary point here is that now with the new engine, it kind of unifies also APIs that you use to run your queries. Like, for example, in Spark, you can write your data processing job in SQL.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can write it in a Python or Scala language using data frame APIs. Or even in more sophisticated Python or Scala using dataset APIs. And regardless of how you wrote your job, it will actually all go into the same kind of query optimization engine. So that kind of speaks to this nice property of Spark, why it's so beloved, is that, hey, it solves the problems at a kind of a platform-centric view. It solves it at the core level in a nice way, and then it builds on top of it kind of and gives you ability to like use different even languages, Python, R, Scala, Java. But all of those, like regardless of whether you use Python now with data frames or R, all of your programs will go through the same execution engine. They will all show the same performance, with some exceptions, of course.
Right.
So that, again, speaks to the power of Spark, where you can learn this thing once.
Oh,
then
yeah, okay.
Then apply your knowledge across the board.
Yeah, and I like that. You know, so everything uses the same, so you don't have to relearn or recode for different languages. Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, cool. So, love it.
The second most probably significant thing in Spark is that it ditched this Java garbage collection.
Oh, thing. Yeah.
If you had experience with Spark 1.x, it was good. It was good. But sometimes, in some cases, you would run your job over like with small data, and it would run fine.
Yeah.
You would run it with a larger data set, and it would run a little slower than you would expect based on the size of the data set.
Mm-hmm.
Then you would start running on a larger and larger data set, and it would start running slower and slower in an exponential way.
Wow,
until it will actually, your executors will start to fail, and when you look at the exception, say, hey, garbage collection overhead exceeded or something of that sort. And at this point, you're like, wow, wait a second, what's going on? This whole thing is crumbling on its fundamental kind of promise. It cannot process the data. And the irony of that is that Hadoop and its wake Spark kind of take a bet on the Java as a platform for big data processing.
Yep.
And in these cases, when it starts to fail with garbage collection overhead, what's going on is that Spark tries to, like at least in 1.x era, try to process every piece of your data, every row, and every field of its data as a separate Java object.
Oh, okay.
And that means that it produces like billions and billions of billions of this object, and Java garbage collector gets overwhelmed with that number of objects. It was never designed to handle that thing.
Yeah.
So that's the irony, like this fundamental platform of Java.
This big data processing can't handle big data.
Yeah, was taken for the big data processing, and it's failing on its face, not being able to handle this core use case.
Yeah. Interesting.
So that was pretty fundamental flaw in Spark 1.x. And the whole taxing project, kind of one of the primary goals was to get this problem resolved.
Yeah.
And this is where the direct management comes into play. It's not only more efficient from the size perspective, like in Java, when you allocate an object, you have to pay an overhead in size to store it. So when you go directly and place your objects in a binary format, you don't need to pay this overhead. But more importantly, you now don't need to do this garbage collection. Like Spark now just allocates this large chunks of memory and manages every object inside of it by itself. So Java is not aware of it. So you can basically, like just any C++ program that has its own memory management, Spark now does exactly the same thing and kind of resolves this fundamental problem.
Okay.
So that's very important
for
Spark.
Yep.
And the final thing, like another core part of the Spark new engine that kind of connected or related to the direct management technique is its code generation capabilities. The highlight of that code generation capability is that it takes kind of a whole stage approach.
Okay.
So imagine you have this very simple query where you scan data, do some filtering, do some projection by selecting columns, and then you aggregate stuff.
Yep.
So now with the whole stage code gen, what Spark will do, it will say that, hey, let me analyze all of these nodes of your query plan.
Okay.
And let each node in my query execution engine generate a relevant piece of bytecode that would do exactly the thing that it needs to do at the lowest level possible. And then I'll put all of these operations together in the single for loop. So there will be no like virtual function calls between those things, no abstractions that introduce overhead. So it will be all very kind of a bare bones.
Yeah.
That's how you hear frequently people refer to Spark 2.x new engine as gives you like bare metal performance.
Okay.
So this is where it comes from. It's like, hey, generate the lowest level of the code possible without all of this
extra
abstractions.
Yeah.
And kind of at the processor level, now processor can deal with the data structures that are on the stack.
So it's really simplifying at the lowest level the query processing.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And you can even say that, hey, now Spark has its own compiler where it just takes this query plan and compiles it down into machine instructions.
Yeah, okay. Nice. So going through a lot of these steps, they basically said, just doing some of these, we could make it so much faster.
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. Right. Like for the simple cases where you just want to process billion rows with like very little overhead, with very little processing, this new approach like takes like a crazy like performance boost. Like if you're doing some simple operations here, then just taking out all of this Java overhead and the virtual memory function calls, virtual function calls overhead, allows you to like run 100x.
And so it looks like a lot faster. Of these were basically going, instead of relying on a third party, in this case Java, yeah, we can do a lot of it ourselves to simplify to simplify the performance, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, okay. It speaks to a kind of a challenge of the big data, yep, as a application or as a problem, because it actually does need a specialized solution. Like if you try to use generic kind of language or framework for it, it actually doesn't scale. It becomes a bottleneck. So you actually, it's interesting. You, in terms of case of Spark, you see as a little language that lives as an island inside of Python, Scala, and kind of gives you consistent experience across its own compiler and experience. Cool. So one last point here is that this whole stage code gen is connected with the direct memory management. So whenever Spark actually needs to process the actual data, so it would generate here and low-level operations that go and directly talk to this memory offsets in your objects.
Yeah.
So instead of going through again through the Java object and incurring this overhead of translation and things like that, it actually goes and directly manipulates memory to kind of build your aggregates and things like that.
Cool.
So from end to end, it kind of gives you bare metal performance.
Bare metal, yeah, yeah.
Well, in theory.
All right.
So just to finish that, to bring you back to this picture that we saw. So now, like when you see here this whole stage code gen, mm-hmm, I don't know if you can see it.
Yep.
Now you understand that what we are talking about. So this whole thing, this whole all of these filters and joins and aggregations, the whole thing now behind the scenes belongs to a single for loop. And all of those kind of primitive operations that do all of those operations kind of happily live together and like try to do their best in terms of performance.
Yeah.
So this nice long rectangles of host stage code gen is a primary way of how a new engine in Spark achieves its performance.
Well, it kind of makes sense now, because as you go back to that, you know, that one slide where it's, you know, the filter and the project, mm-hmm, right? So you got scan, filter, project, aggregate. You know, you go back to that rectangle and you can see that. No, the code. So there's your filter, and then you had project down there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. It's all the same. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can see how what you're talking about, they actually optimized right there. So you know, implemented that. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. You can see how many of those things Spark was able to pull into this single little thing.
Yeah.
It's impressive.
So you can see the optimization, visually see the optimization happening right here.
Yeah, so one of the nice features of Spark is that it has this pretty nice query graph visualization, and it becomes one of the primary tools to kind of spot problems from performance of your point of view. So it's very useful kind of understand what's going on here, to just being able to just say, hey, oh, I see. This is why it's not running as well as I expected to run.
Yeah, so that goes back to your point earlier. As we understand what's supposed to happen here, we can start troubleshooting and look for ways to improve the performance using what you talked about. Right.
That's right.
Very cool. Love that. So I think, this is a great way. So the question I had was, so when you ran that was using Spark 2.x,
yeah,
right?
2.1, yeah.
2.1. Right. Was that, and then you showed the poor performing. Was that using still 2.1, but not some of the optimizations?
Yeah, so the first query that we ran, that was a optimized query.
Okay.
Applying all of the techniques that we are going to go through in future episodes.
Okay, yep.
Awesome episodes.
Yep.
And the second query that we looked in the recorded fashion, didn't apply some of the techniques, not even all of them. It just, I turned off some stuff that was easy to turn off, and then we immediately kind of get into a 6x difference.
So hopefully I'm going to say this right. So you'll still get good performance by going from 1.x to 2.x, right?
Yeah.
But you'll still even get better performance beyond that by implementing some of these performance techniques, right?
Yeah, which we'll talk about. 2.x will certainly give you better performance than 1.x.
Right.
Yes, but in order to like use it to its full potential,
yep.
you need to understand a few things.
Okay.
And unfortunately, if you just go and implement your query by default, okay. it will likely run like that, like the slow version.
Yeah, yeah.
in order to get it to yep. fast version, you need to kind of make some right choices
okay.
in a few places, and that's exactly the point of our future series.
Perfect. Okay. Yeah. So, this is a good foundation. You go look by default. Here's what they implemented in tube, right? With tungsten.
Yep.
Right, the memory optimization, garbage collection, and the query optimization. Great. Okay. So now let's move beyond there. To understand some of the query optimization techniques,
yeah,
that'd be good.
That's right.
Cool, great foundation, Joe. I love that. That clarified things for me. Hopefully, it clarified things for you. So we definitely look forward to having you back because I'd love to look. You know, let's understand the blue rectangles, right? And
yeah.
some of these query techniques, right? How do we get, you know, for installing HD, a Spark cluster, you know, how do we get the best performance out of that?
Yeah. Right? Yeah, stay tuned. It'll be exciting.
Yep, awesome. Hey, thanks everybody for watching. Maxim, thanks for coming. Definitely look forward to having you back. Everybody, thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.